Why young? He's moving awfully fast, Frank, over fences in second-story windows. So he must be agile, and therefore he's probably young, quick in the knee, as it were. And he has access to a lot of astro gasoline containers. All right, Fletch. Flynn's voice lowered. I'll pull on my pants and wander over to Charlestown, see if I can help out. I have a natural dislike of seeing a city on fire, you know. I know. Tell me, Fletcher, after we catch this arsonist boyo, will we also discover he's the murderer of Ruth Fryer? Good night, Frank. If you get the guy, will you call the Star? I'll see Captain Holman does. Ask him to talk to Jack Saunders. I'll do that. I'm always very cooperative with the press, you know. Chapter 27. Driving through the light Sunday mid-morning traffic in the Gia, very considerate of the two policemen following him, Fletch easily found 58 Fenton Street in Brookline. He had had 4 hours' sleep in one of his own guest rooms. He had not renewed contact with the guest asleep in his own bed. Lucy Connors opened the door of apartment 42 to him. Purposely, he supposed, she was dressed in a full peasant skirt and a light blouse with low neck and puffy sleeves. She wore no makeup, no jewelry. Martin Head? Yeah, Fletch said. Trey Magazine. Lucy's eyes went from one of his empty hands to the other, possibly checking for a camera or a tape recorder. Good of you to see me, he said, especially on a Sunday morning. I wouldn't dare have you come any other time. It might improve my reputation. The apartment was the usual one- or two-bedroom arrangement. A small dining table was in a corner of the living room. Along the wall next to it was a hi-fi rig with album-filled shelves. There was a cheap old divan along the opposite wall, an undersized braided rug in front of it, a saggy upholstered chair to one side. A drapeless window ran along the fourth wall, letting in a harsh light. The only wall decoration in the room was a Renoir print over the divan. Marcia, Lucy said. That was the introduction. Marcia Hauptmann was stretched out like a board, her slim haunches in the far corner of the divan, the heels of her moccasin topsiders on the floor in front of her, hands in the pockets of her blue jeans. She wore a heavy blue naval shirt, opened at the throat, sleeves rolled above the elbows. Her hair was a perfect black, shining page boy, her skin as translucent as a well-scrubbed child's. She did not move her head nor her body as Fletch entered. Her dark eyes moved into his, seeing nothing else, expressing more curiosity and challenge than hostility. Fletch said, Marcia. Would you like some coffee, Martin? Clearly, Lucy was nervous. Her new way of life was about to be questioned by a detached professional. Not unless you're having some. We aren't, said Lucy. She sat on the divan, a full seat away from Marcia. Fletch sat in the chair. I'm glad you're doing this, Lucy, he said. People need to understand what you've been through. No one has understood, she said. Not my family, friends, not Bart. I rather thought Bart might understand, or I wouldn't have been so frank with him. He took it as some kind of a personal insult. She gave Marcia's forearm a tug, pulling her hand out of her pocket. She held Marcia's hand. Really, Martin, it's a matter of complete indifference to me as to who understands and who doesn't. Of course, he coughed quickly. You've resolved your problems. Others haven't. Marcia's eyes warmed towards him. I'm afraid most people think this is the problem, Lucy said. I mean, Marcia and I living together, like it's acne or the flu or something that will go away. She gave Marcia's hand a self-conscious squeeze. I guess I went through that phase, too. But why are you more interested in me than in Marcia? I'm interested in Marcia, too, said Fletch. But you're a little older. You were married. I would guess you gave up quite a lot in the way of material things to live with Marcia. I would think you've had to make the bigger adjustments. I guess so. Marcia's lucky. She's always been a little dyke. She smiled fondly at Marcia. Straight through school. All those shower rooms after field hockey, eh, Marcia? To Fletch, she said, Marcia went to boarding school, a much better education than I had. Self-discovery. She started sleeping with girls when she was about 12. Marcia remained silent, a lanky love object at the end of the divan. I had to go through the whole thing, Lucy said. Boy, was I thick. Tell me about it. Fletch took notebook and pen from his pocket. Tell me about the whole thing. As Mrs. C? Absolutely. And I get to see the manuscript before you hand it in. Absolutely. Okay, she exhaled. Shit. Still holding on to her hand, she glanced at Marcia. You know, a nice girl, brought up, goal set for me, a role set for me. We lived in Westwood, a lawn in front, a lawn in back, a two-car garage. Dad owned an automobile agency. My mother was neurotic, a pill freak, still is. I hated Jack, my older brother. He was plain, simply cruel. Big hockey player. I mean, when Mother was freaked out, he'd stick pins in the hamster. He'd stick pins in anything. I barely survived him, bastard. Marcia's eyes rolled to study Lucy's face worriedly. I was considered good-looking, Lucy said hesitantly. You know what that means in an American public high school. First one in the training bra, first one to wear falsies, first one to bleach my hair at 13. First one to beat the baby fat off my ass. Goal-oriented, cheerleader, little skirts and pom-poms. First one to get laid. Very goal-oriented. I didn't enjoy it. Getting laid, I mean. But it was a goal. The first guy to lay me, the fullback, must have weighed 220 pounds. A fat gray belly. It was not fun. Damned near broke me in two. I went to junior college. Went with a guy from Babson who played the violin and was full of the secret international commodity cartel he was going to run. A real drip. At a party, I met Bart. I was getting near graduation. Bart was a goal. He looked normal, acted normal. Dartmouth College, Harvard Law. Going a little bald, older than I was by 12 years, in a law firm, very rich. I played innocent and let him thrill me. I was very dishonest, but people are sometimes in attaining their goals. Fletch asked, did you have any sexual feeling for him at all? How did I know? I didn't know what sexual feeling was. Look, I'd been told boys turn girls on and girls turn boys on, and that was it. There was nothing else. Whatever happened between me and a boy, I figured I was turned on. But you weren't. No way. Never? Firmly, she said, never. I hear some are, but not me, ever. It was pure role-playing. I played the game with myself. Someday my crisis will come. I wasn't even excited. Only I didn't even know it. Come on, Lucy, Fletch said. You knew such a thing as lesbianism existed. No, I didn't. It never entered my head. I mean, I knew such a thing existed. Creatures like Marcia, way over there somewhere, far out. They were different, really weird. I mean, I didn't relate to them at all. I was very successful at suppressing my own real sexual nature. Totally successful. Okay, Fletch said. Soon after we were married, Bart started asking me about frigidity. Conversationally, you know. What did I know about it? He began having these long talks with the woman in the next apartment, and then coming to bed stinko. When he was on trips out of town, I picked up a guy or two. For Bart's sake. Nothing ever happened. I mean, I never got turned on by anybody. So when he suggested a psychiatrist, I went along with it. He was beginning to make me think something was wrong. The psychiatrist was a great guy. He got me toward the truth very quickly. I turned him off, ran away from him, ran away from the truth. It was just too shocking. You know, I was one of those creatures over there. I like girls. I tried to bullshit the psychiatrist. He was a slob, but by then I was too close to the truth. I couldn't bullshit myself. I was listening to myself. This went on a long, long time. A terribly long time. I was bitchy, irascible, tough, mean, violent. Bart and I had slugging matches. I hit him. I threw things at him. I mean, I hit him with things, objects, anything at hand.
You did?
Yes.
I see.
He had so many goddamned welts on his face so often he had to tell the people at the office he was doing boxing as a sport. He might as well have been living with a bad-tempered second-string welterweight. I was really violent.
Are you still?
No.
Marcia looked at her from beneath half-drawn lids.
Well, I mean, Lucy said, sometimes we play, you know.
Yeah, said Fletch.
I felt I was in some kind of a box and had to fight my way out. Can you understand that, Martin?
Sure. It's a wonder I didn't belt a few shrinks along the way. I took everything out on poor old Bart.
So how did you meet Marcia? Fletch asked. One day I went into a boutique and saw something I liked. Marcia. She waited on me. I bought a shirt. Next day I went back and bought a pair of pants. The third day I went in and started to buy a bikini. I called her into the dressing room to ask her how she thought it fitted me.
I was feeling something. The tingle. I guess I was opened up enough then to the idea of girls. I'd been forced to become conscious of my real desires. In the dressing room, Marcia put the palm of her hand against my hip, looked me in the eyes, and said, "Who are you bullshitting?" Lucy picked up Marcia's hand and looked at it wonderingly. Her first touching me was the most satisfactory feeling I'd ever had. They looked at each other, apparently recalling the moment. Fletch looked at his notebook. Finally, Lucy said, "Are you straight, Martin?"
"You mean, do I like girls?"
"Yes."
"Yes?"
"Well, I guess that's how you can understand." Fletch chuckled.
"I guess so."
"I mean, you don't seem offended."
"I'm not. Why should I be?"
"Would you be if I were your sister?"
"I don't think so."
"Some are. Everybody should be what he or she is." Lucy said, "Bart even suggested religion for me. Jesus."
"How did you handle the marital situation?" Fletch asked.
"First, I went through a long period thinking I could have it both ways. Marcia and I were making it together, sometimes here, sometimes at my place. It was beautiful. Too good. It was the real thing. It wasn't a passing phase on my part. It was me. We were getting careless. I mean, we were even doing it at my apartment while a servant was there. Oh, my God. I realized unconsciously I wanted Bart to find out. He was too thick. I finally had to tell him."
Fletch asked, "How did he take it?"
"I said, like a personal insult. He thought he had enough masculinity for both of us. He thought he could snap me out of it if I just gave myself to him fully. He suggested more psychiatrists. He suggested religion. He even suggested we go into a marriage of convenience thing, both of us making love to girls on the side. That was about the last straw. By then, Marcia had come to mean just too much to me, as a person, you know."
Again, they exchanged looks. Marcia's hand was squeezed.
"Bart set up the boutique for us, financially. I mean, the one we now run. You can forget the name of it. We don't need the publicity."
"Does he still own it?"
"He's still financing it. We're not completely divorced yet."
"You say he was hurt?"
"I guess so. I guess this revelation about me caused him to question his own masculinity. I mean, he loved me, he married me, and I wasn't there at all."
"But at the same time, apparently he hadn't found your sexual relations satisfactory."
"He had put up with them. He hadn't thrown me out. It might have been better if he had. Instead, he'd tried to help."
"Do you ever see each other?"
"We bump into each other. Boston's a small city. Everybody's always embarrassed. These days, you know, everybody knows everybody else's sexual business."
"Hey, Marcia," Fletch said. "What do you think?"
Lucy looked at her expectantly.
Bright dark eyes in Fletch's, Marcia shook her head slightly and said nothing.
Fletch closed his notebook and put it in his pocket.
"Again, sorry about coming on a Sunday morning," he said. "I tried several times to phone you Tuesday night. Weren't you here?"
"Tuesday?"
Lucy looked puzzled at Marcia.
"Oh, Tuesday. I was in Chicago buying for the boutique. I was supposed to fly back Tuesday afternoon, but the plane was late. I was here by 9 o'clock. You were here, weren't you, Marcia?"
She said, "Yeah."
"I have to fly out to Chicago sometime soon," Fletch said. "What did you fly, Pan American?"
"TWA," Lucy said. "That's better, huh?"
"We were supposed to arrive at 5, but it was 7:30 before we got to Boston. Fog." "Well, Lucy, I thank you very much. Will you keep the name of Connors?"
"I don't think so. I guess I'll use my maiden name, Hislop. Get out of Bart's hair, what's left of it."
Looking straight at Fletch, Marcia said, "You didn't call here Tuesday night."
"I tried." Fletch stood up and put his pen in his inside jacket pocket. "Phone must have been out of order."
Marcia's eyes followed him as he went toward the door. Lucy followed him. Fletch said, "What's this about a murder in your husband's apartment?"
"That's irrelevant," said Lucy.
"I know, I'm just curious. I mean, murders are interesting."
"Not for the story?"
"Of course not. What's it got to do with you?"
"Some girl was murdered in our old apartment after Bart left for Italy. He rented the apartment to some schnook who says he found the body."
"You mean your husband killed her?"
"Bart? You're kidding. There's not an ounce of violence in him. Believe me, I should know. If he were going to kill anybody, he would have killed me."
"Have the police questioned you?"
"Why should they?"
From across the room, the harsh light from the window streaking between them, Marsh's eyes were locked on Fletcher's face.
"You must still have a key to the apartment," he said.
"I suppose I do," she said somewhere.
"Interesting," said Fletch.
"The police probably don't know where to find me," Lucy said. "Everything here is under Marsh's name. You wouldn't have known where to find me if Bart hadn't given you the number."
"That's right."
"I'm still surprised he did. Bart must be coming to the idea that this situation happens to other people, too."
Fletch said, "Your husband's a surprising fellow."
"How did you happen to meet him?"
"He's doing some trust work for my editor. We all happen to be together in Montreal," Fletch said, "Tuesday night."
Marcia still had not moved. Her eyes, clear and unwavering, remained on Fletch's face. A small amount of fear had entered those eyes.
"When will we see your story?" Lucy asked.
"Oh, a few weeks." Fletch opened the door.
"I'll send it to you, if it works out."
Chapter 28. The Countess was not at the apartment when Fletch returned. She had left a note for him saying she had gone to Mass. When the downstairs door's buzzer rang, Fletch shouted into the mouthpiece, "Who is it?"
"Robinson."
It was certainly not the Countess's voice.
"Who?" "Clay Robinson, let me in."
Fletch had never heard of Clay Robinson. He let him in. Fletch stood in the opened front door listening to the elevator. A curly-haired man in his mid-twenties got off the elevator. His face was puffy, his eyes red-rimmed and bloodshot, the pupils glazed. His lips were cracked. As soon as he let himself through the elevator doors, he returned his hands to the pockets of his raincoat.
"Fletcher?"
"Yeah?" The man's words slurred.
"I was engaged to marry Ruth Fryer."
Fletch took a step forward with his left foot and swung with his right hand. His fist landed hard against Robinson's jaw. Going down, Robinson couldn't get his hands out of his pockets. He crashed against a small table under the mirror across from the elevator, rolled off it, and fell onto the floor, a flurry of raincoat. Fletch put his right knee at the base of Robinson's ribcage and knelt hard on it. In the right-hand pocket of the raincoat, inside Robinson's hand, Fletch felt the pistol. Robinson's eyes rolled toward his brows. Fletch grabbed the gun from the pocket and stood up. It was a .22 caliber target pistol. Robinson sat on the rug, one arm straight to the floor, a knee up, his other hand gently touching his jaw.
"Come in," Fletch said.
He went into his apartment and put the gun in a drawer of the desk in the den. When he returned to the apartment's foyer, Robinson was standing in the door, dazed, right hand in coat pocket, left hand rubbing his jaw.
"Come in," Fletch said.
He closed the door behind Robinson. "I'll put some coffee on. You take a shower." He walked Robinson down the corridor to the master bedroom's bathroom. Sylvia's things were everywhere. "Hot, then cold." Fletch left him in the bathroom. He heard the shower running while he crossed the hall to the den with a coffee tray. After a while, Robinson appeared in the door of the den, hair wet, tie hanging from his opened collar, raincoat over his arm. His eyes were less glazed.
"Have some coffee," Fletch said.
Robinson dropped his coat on a side chair and sat in a red leather chair.
"You've had a rough time," Fletch handed him a cup of steaming black coffee.
"I'm sorry." Robinson, saucer held at chest level, sipped his coffee, blinking slowly. Fletch said, "I didn't kill Ruth Fryer. Nothing says you have to believe me or even can believe me. I found her body. She was a beautiful girl, and she looked like a hell of a nice person. I didn't kill her."
Robinson said, "Shit."
"Shooting me would have been a real mistake," Fletch said, "but I dig the impulse." In his chair, Robinson choked. Then, breath out of control, he put his coffee on the side table, his face forward in his hands, and sobbed. Fletch went into the living room and studied the Paul Clay. The noise from the den was a full-chested, strangulated, broken-hearted sobbing. It stopped. Then it started again. When the pauses became more frequent and longer, Fletch went back to the bathroom and soaked a hand towel in cold water. He wrung it out. Going back into the den, he tossed the wet towel at Robinson.
"Anything I can do for you?"
Robinson rubbed his face in the towel, then pushed it back over his hair. He sat, head over his knees, towel pressed against his forehead. "Were you at the funeral?" Fletch asked.
"Yes, yesterday, in Florida."
"How are her parents?"
"There's only her father."
Fletch said, "I'm sorry for him.
I'm sorry for you."
Clay Robinson sat back in a slouch. "I hadn't broken down before this. I guess I've been holding myself pretty tight." He grinned. "The thought of killing you got me through it."
"You want some food?"
"No."
"And you don't want anything to drink?"
"No."
"Where are you from?"
"Washington. I work for the Justice Department."
"Oh?"
"A clerk.
A clerk with a college education." "How did you meet Ruth Fryer?"
"On an airplane. I was flying some papers in from Los Angeles. We spent the night together."
"You picked her up?"
"We met," said Clay Robinson. "Fell in love. We were getting married New Year's."
"I don't remember her wearing an engagement ring."
"I hadn't bought one yet."
"Have you ever lived on clerk's pay?"
"Yes." "I came up Tuesday," Clay said.
"To Boston?"
"Yes. I was going to surprise her. I knew she had ground duty all this week. I took some time off. By the time I got to the hotel, she'd gone."
"Do you know with whom?"
"No. Her roommate just said Ruth's uniform was there, so she must have changed and gone out. I didn't know about it, about the murder, until next morning when I went to the airport to find her."
"What did you do?"
"I don't know. I don't remember. It was the next morning I called her father and began to make arrangements to fly the body down. The police had already done an autopsy. Arrogant bastards."
"Where did you get the gun?"
"Pawn shop in the South End. Paid $100 for it."
"This morning?"
"Last night."
"Where did you stay last night?"
"Mostly in a bar. I got pretty drunk. I fell into some hotel at 2 or 3 this morning."
"You want some more coffee?"
"I don't know what I want."
"There's an unused guest room in there," Fletch said. "If you want to hit the bed, it's all right with me."
"No."
A little more clear-eyed, Robinson looked at Fletch wonderingly.
"I was going to kill you."
"Yeah?"
"You moved mighty fast."
Fletch said, "What are you going to do now?"
"I'm going to find Ruthie's murderer."
"Good for you."
"What do you know about it?" Robinson asked. "I mean about the murder."
"It's being handled by Inspector Francis Xavier Flynn of the Boston Police Department."
"Who does he think killed Ruthie?"
"Me?"
"Who do you think killed Ruthie?"
"I have a couple of ideas."
"Are you going to tell me?"
"No."
Robinson said,
"You have the gun."
"Yeah," Fletch said, "but you might have another $100.
Robinson's white face moved as slowly as changes in the moon.
"Why don't you go home?" Fletch said. "Go downstairs, get into a taxi, go to the airport, take the next plane to Washington, taxi to your apartment, have something warm to eat, go to bed, and tomorrow morning go to work."
Robinson said, "Sounds nice."
"Thought it would if someone laid it out for you."
Robinson said, "All right."
He stood up stiffly and reached for his raincoat.
"What am I supposed to say to you?"
Fletch said, "Goodbye."
"I guess if I ever find out you are the murderer, I will kill you."
"Okay."
"Even if they put you in jail for 20, 30 years, however long, when they release you, I will kill you."
"It's a deal."
At the door, Robinson said, "Goodbye."
Fletch said, "Come again, when you're feeling better."
Before leaving the apartment himself, an hour or two later, Fletch wrote a note to the Countess saying he had gone to the airport to pick up Andy. Chapter 29. It was a dark brown wooden Victorian house, 3 stories under a slate roof, on the harbor side in Winthrop. It had a small front yard and cement steps leading up to a deep porch. Looking between the houses as he walked from where he had parked his car, Fletch saw their shallow backyards ended at a concrete seawall. Beyond was the cold, slate-gray, dirty water of Boston Harbor. The airport was a mile or two across the water. On the porch, Fletch looked through the front window into the living room. At the back of the room, 4 music stands were set up in a row. Behind them, to their right, was a baby grand piano. its lid piled with stacks of sheet music. A cello stood against the piano. The divan and chairs, coffee table and carpet seemed incidental in the large, wainscoted room. Two teenage boys who looked just alike, not only in their blue jeans and cotton shirts, but in their slim builds and light coloring, were setting sheet music on the stands. A jet taking off from the airport across the harbor screamed overhead. The storm door to Fletcher's right opened.
Mr. Fletcher?
He had not rung the bell. Flynn's small face, at his great height, peered around the corner at him.
Hi, Fletch said, backing away from the window he'd been peering through. How are you?
I'm fine, Flynn said. Your police escort phoned me to report you were approaching my house. They fear you threaten our well-being.
I do, said Fletch, holding out a 5-pound box. I brought your family some chocolate.
How grand of you.
Flynn held the spring door open with his huge left arm and took the candy with his right hand.
Bribery, is it?
It occurred to me it was the city of Boston which owed me a bottle of whiskey, not the Flynn family.
Flynn said, Come in, Fletch.
The vestibule was dark and scattered with a half dozen pairs of rubbers. A baby carriage was parked at an odd angle. Flynn led him into the living room. Besides the boys in the room, one of whom now had a violin in his hands, there was a girl of about 12, with full curly blonde hair and huge blue saucer eyes. The color of her short fluffy dress matched her eyes. The boys were about 15.
Munchkin, Flynn said, this is Mr. Fletcher, the murderer.
Flynn pointed off his children, Randy, Todd, Jenny. Randy, bow and violin in one hand, extended his right.
How do you do, sir?
As did his twin, Todd.
Ah, said Flynn, my family gets to meet all sorts.
A boy about 9 years old entered. His hair was straight brown. Mostly he was glasses and freckles.
This is Winnie, said Flynn.
Fletch shook hands with him.
No Francis Xavier, Flynn?
One's enough, said Flynn.
No bloody Irwin Maurice, either.
Elizabeth Flynn entered through a door behind the piano. Her light brown, straight hair fell to her shoulders. Her body, under her skirt and cardigan, was full and firm. Her unquestioning light blue eyes were deep set over magnificent cheekbones. They were warm and humorous and loving.
This is Fletch, Elizabeth, the murderer. I mentioned him.
How do you do?
She held his hand over the music stand.
You'd like some tea, I think.
I would.
He brought me some candy.
Flynn handed her the box.
Better give him some tea.
How nice.
She looked at the box in her hands.
Perhaps for after supper?
We were about to have our musicale, Flynn said. To the children, he said, What is it today?
18, 1.
Todd's Adam's apple seemed too large for his sinewy neck, especially when he spoke.
F major.
Beethoven, we're up to that, are we?
Jenny said, I am.
Sorry to wake you all up last night, Fletch said.
Elizabeth had come in the other door with tea things.
Come over and have a cuppa, Flynn said.
While Flynn and Fletch sat over their tea, Elizabeth at the piano helped the children tune their instruments.